Okay, great. So now that Kathy and Tom have very nicely set the stage, I will talk in a somewhat more speculative and perhaps also broad way about the problem of forming the oldest globular clusters, a bit in the spirit of the originally planned panel discussion. So let's just briefly begin by having a look at the history of the universe. What we have is that in the Big Bang, we start with a very, very simple, smooth initial state, and then 14 billion years later, we end up with a very complex, complicated universe. And then the question is, how did we get from the simple beginnings to the state today? And then, well, the interesting things happen at roughly 100 million years after the Big Bang, the formation of the first stars. This is what Tom talked about. And then, perhaps at 500 million years, we can expect the formation of the oldest globular clusters. And of course, this all is still happening at present beyond our present observational capability, but this is bound to change with the launch of, well, the JWST roughly 10 years from now. And this really has been the driver behind much of all the theoretical activity and excitement that has been going on in the recent years. So then, of course, I guess everyone here in the room agrees that globular clusters are so particularly fascinating because they really have a bearing on many, many different fields and aspects of astronomy. It's a very unifying a theme. We are really forced to integrate a lot of different disciplines. And in particular, we have to think about what galaxy formation, the connection to galaxy formation. It already has been said that probably we have different pathways to globular cluster formation. In the local universe, we are able to observe the formation of superstar clusters and merging systems. But then the question that I would like to focus now on is, how did the oldest, most metal-poor globular clusters form? And, well, again, Tom has very nicely talked about the formation of the very first stars. Why are the very first bound objects not globular clusters? In terms of just the parameters, million solar masses collapsing at a redshift of 20 to 30, one could say that could fit the bill. But then, of course, as Tom has said, the fact that we have the cooling due to hydrogen molecules really changes the picture and determines that we do not have globular clusters, but one or perhaps a few massive stars. So let's briefly look at the typical cooling behavior, because this really turns out to be very much at the center of I think, what is going on. If we look at the cooling rate versus temperature, then of course it's well known that in temperatures, a temperature in excess of 10,000 Kelvin, we have very, very efficient cooling due to atomic hydrogen. And then, well, in the low temperature regime, a few thousand Kelvins, which is the typical temperature regime for these first star-forming halos, population 3 halos, if we take away the metals, which of course we do not have prior to the onset of star formation, then we really end up with the hydrogen molecules. And then, as Tom has said, and I will just very briefly repeat this, the fact that we have a cooling due to hydrogen molecules, and then the microfluidics, basically just the basic quantum mechanical properties of the hydrogen molecules, sets characteristic scales for the temperature and the density. And this then translates to a first order into a characteristic fragment scale, a few hundred solar masses, which then tells us what, according to the efficiency of fragmentation, of accretion, we could expect for the first star. So the very first bound objects will form one or perhaps a small multiple system, and definitely not a huge cluster of objects. So, okay, now what about the origin of the oldest globular clusters? And then, very briefly, let's look at the most basic observational facts that we have. In terms of the metallicity distribution, number of clusters versus metallicity, here for the Milky Way, but a similar picture would be true for extragalactic systems too. We have a clear bimodality. We have a metal-poor peak and a metal-rich peak, which I think ought to tell us something important about the formation process. And then also, if you look at the ages, Kathy has mentioned this in her very first slide, I believe, we can reach very high ages, perhaps up to 13 giga-years, which then translates really in redshifts that are comparable or perhaps even in excess of the redshift of reionization, which then leads us to a possible origin in the pre-reionization universe, when the intergalactic medium, the IGM, was still predominantly neutral. And now, one brief speculative remark. If you look at the star formation history of the universe, and plot here star formation rate versus redshift. Here we have redshift of 30, and then we go down all to zero. This is a curve based on a Presch-Tegner type argument that I have calculated with Avi Loeb recently. And what we here see is, just focus on the solid line. You have this overall sweep of star formation, but then you see that there's this double bumped shape, and we have this this characteristic suppression of star formation close to the redshift of reionization. And this suppression of star formation, it is still debated whether this is really true, but it is still a possibility. The suppression close to the redshift of reionization might be due to the sudden photoionization heating feedback once we have ionized the IGM. And then, well, again, as a speculative point, one could say, well, and argue that these metal poor globulars, they might be predominantly due to star formation going on in this very high redshift peak. And then the well more metal rich clusters would be due to star formation going on at later redshifts. So we might here see the signature of reionization in this temporal suppression. But again, as I said, that is speculation at present. Okay, now where might the first globular clusters have formed? And Cathy Clark has already very nicely talked about this. We believe that the first dwarf galaxies, as one could call them, systems of 10 to the 8 solar masses, both in dark matter and gas, collapsing at well 10 to 15, these might be very interesting systems. And the reason, perhaps most importantly, is that the virial temperatures of these objects are large enough, in excess of 10,000 Kelvin, so that these objects can cool with atomic line cooling alone, regardless of whether metals or H2 is present. And again, these rough parameters might be slightly akin to older ideas or also to the Harris-Padritz supergalactic, supergiant giant molecular clouds. Okay, now Cathy talked about this work that we did. Simulated the formation of a dwarf galaxy. And here we show the dark matter component, here the gas. And then we here have this, this clumping of the dark matter. Well, the baryons begin to fall into the deepest potentials well, into the deepest potential wells. And if you now look at the character of the dark matter substructure and plot the mass spectrum of this, the blue line here, then we find something which is very close to m to the minus 2, which of course is close to what is observed for the mass spectrum of the old Milky Way globulars. And then this slide has already been shown by Cathy, that we in this case end up with a small system, six globular clusters with roughly the right masses and perhaps sizes. But then, okay, to wrap this up, now we could have the very first order the following model for globular cluster formation in the context of hierarchical structure formation. And here we look at the merger tree for a typical giant elliptical galaxy. Time goes from the top to the bottom, redshift of 5 to redshift of 0, and then the size width of these structures corresponds to the fraction of the total mass. And then we see that at first we have a great many numbers of small objects which then over time merge to build up the whole elliptical. And then as a very first approximation, as I said, we might argue that the metal poor globulars form briefly before or at reionization, and then later on we have multiple episodes of globular cluster formation during major merger events. Well, this is just meant as a well, this is just meant as a schematic. I do not want to argue about details of this plot because it is also just as a this is just meant as a schematic. Right, that's true.
Now, yes? I think we'll see on Thursday that there's a wider variety of ages in globular clusters outside of our galaxy than implied by Nevin's plot. It's not clear that. In fact, Beasley compared his hierarchical model with data directly.
But of course, also for our galaxy, this picture actually would look different. because we only would have sort of one major merger event, perhaps at a redshift of 3, and this is really particular for an e-galaxy. A Milky Way merger tree would look much more benign, less merger driven.
This is something we'll be assessing Thursday to test this morning.
Okay, so now, as I said before, just to show an example of the many things that connect to globular cluster formation. It is really something which has bearing on many other problems in cosmology and astrophysics. So I now would like to focus again on the same dwarf-like system and would now like to discuss an alternative pathway. What we had before in the calculation I did with Cassie was that we had the system sitting at a pre-enriched metallicity of 10 to the minus 2 solar. But now, if we assume that in a special situation, we might have a situation where we do not have any metals, but also we do not allow any molecules, hydrogen molecules, from forming, which then means that we are completely rid of any possible cooling agents in the low temperature regime. We just have the atomic cooling. Of course, this is still effective because we have this overall system sitting in a way that it can collapse as a whole. But now, what happens if we have this situation? If we just take the metals away, and then what this leads us to, this might lead us to the possible formation mechanism of the first supermassive black holes. This is work recently done with in collaboration with Avi Loeb, and we believe indeed that these first dwarf galaxies, if we manage to take away the metals, and if we also manage in special circumstances to prevent the molecules, hydrogen molecules, from forming, then indeed we might have a very attractive way to form seed black holes. When Loeb and Razio looked at this problem some time ago, then what they found in their simulation, they focused on slightly larger systems, 10 to the 9 solar masses collapsing at a redshift of 5. They found that the gas component was very, very quickly transferred into a stellar collisionless component. They had very efficient gas cooling, fragmentation, star formation going on. And then also, one would expect very, very efficient negative feedback, mostly supernova driven, due to this star formation. So it will be very difficult by this kind of collapse to assemble a lot of the material into the very center. It will be difficult to form a compact central object in this situation. But now, if we have a situation where we indeed suppress star formation during this collapse, and the way it might be possible to suppress the star formation is that we photodissociate the molecules by photons in the Lyman-Werner background. And if you look at the typical energy range here, this is just below the Lyman limit, which means that these photons are very dangerous, very penetrative in principle. They could penetrate a still neutral IgM. And of course, remember, we here talk about structure and star formation, object formation, in a still mostly neutral IgM before reionization. But these photons will be able to penetrate. And then what we then find is that in this case, we have a very different outcome from what we have seen before in the simulation I did with Kathy. Because now we find that we are able to funnel a lot of the material into the very center. Here we have a spin which had initially zero spin, somewhat artificial. Then we just form one compact object in the center. And we have 1 million solar masses at a scale of below 0.1 parsec. We couldn't follow it any further. Then we had to form a sink particle. We ran out of resolution. And if we have, on the other hand, a high spin halo, then we form a compact binary of similar masses and, well, a separation of perhaps 10 parsec. So very, very different outcome just by modifying the cooling physics here. Yeah. Otherwise, right. I mean, I would say it's also an old problem, right? Because it was for a long time argued, what happens if you have a system that is in collapse, in free fall collapse? Of course, you could argue whatever is in free fall collapse will also somehow manage to fragment. Of course, that is the old Hoyle-Hunter picture of building up the IMF, basically. But of course, then, I guess, in the 80s, we had a paper by Tolin and Kaczynski and Ries who said that it might not be so able to actually fragment something in a collapsing medium. Really, you have to have a quasi-hydrostatic medium before really then the gravitational instability can kick in. And this might be a similar problem here. Really, you don't have fragmentation on the way down to this compact center. You do not see it. But you do have fragmentation. You would fragment the system if you allow metals or hydrogen molecules to form. Then you would see fragmentation, because then the smaller dark matter halos would be able to attract gas in their shallow potential well. At this point, of course, the small dark matter halos are also sitting in the larger system, but they cannot attract the hot gas, because the gas is too hot. So that is actually the trick here. But that really was just one example to show you how many things connect into each other at this stage in our study of structure formation in the early universe. And so I briefly summarize. As Tom has told you, and I just briefly repeated, the first luminous objects are not globular clusters, but instead they form perhaps an isolated or perhaps a small multiple of massive stars in the center of the dark matter halo. And then the first dwarf galaxies are interesting potential sites for, well, either the formation of the metal poor globular clusters in case that metals are present, or else if metals are absent, perhaps an interesting site to form the first supermassive black hole in the universe. And I conclude with that. Thank you.
I'd like to mention some observational facts that seem to indicate that there was galactic structure in place before the globular clusters formed. And that is that there is this picture of alpha enhancement showing that the halo globular clusters formed very quickly before you could have any type 1A supernovae. But what seems to have had very little recognition is that in the bulge globular clusters, you find high metallicity with alpha enhancement, which shows that there was a region of the galaxy in which metallicity was being increased very rapidly, but still this absolute clock says it happened very early, so that there must have been a galactic bulge at this time where there was a high density and you could have very high metal enrichment.
If we assume there's no molecular hydrogen because of your Lyman-Werner background, then is it then just a metallicity switch which decides whether you form a supermassive black hole or a globular cluster?
Well, I mean, it is the metallicity switch, but it also turns out it's not so easy to keep the molecules from forming, because even if you have a reasonably strong background, of course at some point when the system collapses and becomes more dense, then it will tend to self-shield. Mm-hmm. And so then you really have to have a quite substantial background fluxes to overcome the self-shielding. Mm-hmm. But barring that, it is the metallicity switch, yes.
And where would that metallicity switch be? Could that give you a minimum at 10 to the minus 2? It would be lower, surely, wouldn't it?
I mean, the estimates that we have done and that other people have done so far indicates that it is lower by one or perhaps two orders of magnitude. Mm. So it's still a mystery. Where does
where are the metal poor globular clusters?
10 to the minus 2 come from.
Yep.
Are you sure that there are gas at 10 to the minus 3 or 10 to the minus 4?
I mean,
the first stars are really efficient.
Get everything
up to 10 to the minus 2.
Right. I mean, that's actually true. I mean, if you imagine you have let's say a dwarf galaxy type system, 10^7 solar masses in gas, and you just have one single massive pop 3 star. Of course, one other big difference in the case of pop 3 is that you have then you might be able to have very, very large yields if you have the right mass range, and if you have a pair instability supernova, then you might have actually a situation where you convert almost half of the stellar material into matter, and then into metals, and then these are completely disrupted into the halo. So you can have a very, very quick self enrichment, and actually one star would suffice to bump you up to that level.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment. So that since this did come up earlier, the mechanism you invoked to form the million solar mass objects is in fact the mechanism that Rees and I proposed, And then the question becomes, and this comes about, a crucial ingredient is to have the strong UV radiation field to suppress the molecules, to suppress the cooling, to keep the gas at 10 to the 4th degrees, to make the genes mass a million solar masses. And I think the physics of that is very, very clear. What isn't clear then, so you will get, if you suppress the molecules, I'm convinced, and your simulations verify this, that you will get million solar mass objects. The question is, what will they be? Will they be luminous or will they be dark? And that depends on the subsequent evolution of these million solar mass clouds. So you would imprint them by having a strong UV field, as you did in your simulations, and as we proposed. Then the question is, what would happen to them afterwards? If they subsequently fragmented, then they might make luminous globular clusters. That's a sort of a question that's up in the air. That might happen if they cooled over a long, slow process. But one way to be sure that they would fragment is simply to turn the UV field off, because then the gas within the million solar mass objects could cool down below 10 to the 4 solar masses. So if you envisage a situation in which the UV field was intermittent, either in space or time, say because you had a flickering AGN inside a galaxy, then while that UV field was on, it would imprint the million solar mass clouds, and when it went off, they would then fragment, or the clouds that hadn't formed would form field spheroid stars, for example. So I think it's not at all clear, at least in my mind, what these objects would actually become, whether they would become black holes or stellar system. That depends on the subsequent evolution of the gas, but I can at least imagine a case where they would almost certainly form luminous globular clusters, and that would be with this intermittent UV field, and that might come about because of a time variable AGN in a galaxy, for example.
Just like to come back to the fragmentation issue, which I agree with Mike, I think it is up in the air, but it's not just a cooling criterion that's involved. That's a necessary but not a sufficient criterion for fragmentation. You also want to have a lot of nonlinear density structure before you actually start to collapse. I'm not saying that it can't be introduced, but you have to worry about having something which is smooth and hydrostatic. Just cooling it on a less than dynamical time scale on its own, it's been shown by a number of numerical simulations, doesn't actually induce fragmentation. You really need to have some density structure at the outset, so you also have to worry about that in the globular cluster case.
No, I think that's a sensible comment. I actually want to make a comment about something entirely different. I noticed the way the conference is organized is that we're going to talk about later globular cluster formation after the break and pre-galactic globular cluster formation before the break. And I guess I'd like to raise the question that hasn't been raised yet. It's a very basic one, and that is that it's always struck me that the fact that the globular clusters in galaxies are relatively concentrated towards the centers of the galaxies, and they're distributed in space about the same way that the luminous matter in galaxies is distributed, much more compact than the dark matter is distributed. And the question has always been in my mind how you would get that if the globular clusters formed well before galaxies. Then you could imagine that they should cluster like the dark matter distribution and end up in the galaxies later in a way that's distributed like the dark matter instead of the luminous matter. So one of the things I've been wondering about for many, many years is what is the relationship between these pre-galactic objects and the globular clusters we actually see, if any, because of this observational constraint that the globulars seem to have a much more concentrated space distribution than the dark matter distribution. And I think that, to me, is hard to understand entirely on the basis of gravitational clustering and pre-galactic formation.
There is this filtering, right? The highest, the earliest structures form from the highest density peaks that are at the center. So quantitatively, you're saying that doesn't work out in detail. Tom, do you think?
In fact, that was exactly sort of the point I wanted to make. You know, we have so many good simulations now, and we had them for many years. It's just a shame that nobody really looked at exactly that problem. Just trace it back. It's very simple to do.
Back at 11 sharp.